We grow when we give.
We grow when we give.
We grow when we give.
Nosotros crecemos cuando damos.
We grow when we give.
Давайте и дастся вам.
Атаеру токи сечосуру.
We grow when we give.
Welcome to ROG, Return on Generosity. I'm your host, Shannon Cassidy. This podcast celebrates generosity at work, not financial giving. Giving valuable time, mutual respect, alternative perspectives, and genuine collaboration.
Our special guest today is Liz Christo, a partner at Stage 2 Capital, where she partners with Dan Heck to back early stage entrepreneurs in their journey to build generational software businesses. Liz spent the last 6 years at OpenView Venture Partners, which is where we met. She joined OpenView in 2016 to lead the expansion platform and build out the post-investment consulting team, was elevated to partner, and joined the investment committee in 2017, and ultimately led the investment team with a focus on developing the systems, processes, and team to identify the win, the best expansion stage software deals. Liz is an avid reader, amateur chef, and spends as much time as she can outside in Vermont with her husband, Drew, and dog, Bear. What I appreciate most about you, Liz, is your authenticity. You are genuine and encourage others to be the same. Welcome to ROG.
Thanks, Shannon. It's awesome to be here.
Yes, it's awesome to have you here, long awaited. Would love for you to start with a little bit of your background.
Yeah, I mean, as you highlighted, you know, my kind of journey has been from an operator to an investor. And I started my early career working for small startups, got acquired into a public company, NetSuite, and spent the better part of a decade there selling ERP to CFOs, which I joke was an education and go-to-market because we worked across every size company, every vertical, every country, but also doesn't get much more boring than selling like back office GL software. Loved what I was doing there. Got to work on a whole bunch of different parts of go-to-market over the course of that time. And when I left, I ended up joining OpenView Venture Partners and took my first step into the venture capital world. And we highlighted a little bit of this, but my journey has really been first with supporting portfolio companies post-investment and then making the jump to the investment side more recently. And today, I work with a handful of companies in our portfolio, partnering with Dan Heck specifically, and we work in a pod. So we have two partners that work on every deal. We source together, we do our investment diligence together, we make investments together, and then we support that portfolio of companies together. And I get to work with a whole bunch of really amazing entrepreneurs and founding teams and CEOs and helping them on their journey to build, you know, large and successful businesses.
That's amazing. I love it. And a link to your website will be in the show notes, and I encourage everybody to check that out. But a couple of acronyms that you shared that our listeners might not be familiar with, ERP and GL.
Yeah. So financial software, enterprise resource planning and general ledger. It's back office finance software. Every company in the world has finances. So it's like the definition of a horizontal product.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. So you're a very generous leader. That's the reason why I wanted to invite you to the show and hear more of your thought leadership. You always look for opportunities for people to grow. You're very committed to the culture that you work in, even just the way that you're talking about your partnership with Drew and you know how you collaborate. You make great connections with people. So I think you're in the right role, a great utility of your strengths. But curious to get your thoughts on where do you see generosity at work?
Yeah, I mean, I see a ton of it. I think, you know, as I was thinking about the big themes here and what generosity looks like for me and to me at this point in my career, a lot of it comes back to time and how we think about the giving of our time. And you know, in the role that I'm in now at Stage 2, we have this really interesting model where we have a network of limited partners. So people who invest in our funds and thereby invest in our portfolio companies and are part of like the broader Stage 2 umbrella. And that is this group of hundreds of really some of the busiest, most accomplished, sought after leaders in the software industry who have so many asks on their time. And it's always incredible to me to watch how when something comes up and an ask from one of our portfolio companies, they can drop everything and move incredibly quickly to actually help. And I think that to me, what's so amazing about that is how powerful it is to see the impact of even 30 minutes. So if you can get the right person who has the right experience on the phone or on email at the moment you need it as an early stage founder, and you can actually get access to the answer you need, it can short circuit potentially weeks of discovery and learning and making mistakes or just seeing around a corner. And so I think a lot about kind of this time aspect and what is the fastest way to get somebody the help they need. And sometimes that is a call. Sometimes that's email. Sometimes that's pointing them to a different resource or acknowledging that you aren't the best person to give them that help and making that really clear. But time is kind of what I come back to. It's an incredibly precious resource. And when we can be generous with it and help people actually, get the time they need, I think that's really important.
That is so important. And what I'm hearing you say there too is how to prioritize. There's so many demands on your time and clever ways, some of which are the software that we use, some of them are the devices that we have or the people that we interact with. So what advice do you have, or where have you seen prioritization as a way to invest your time wisely?
I'm going to lean back on my own journey with this, because I feel like it's the thing that I can speak to most clearly. If I think about I break my career into segments. My early career was a lot about saying yes. And any ask of my time was just, yeah, how can I help? And that, whether that was my boss, my peers, people that worked for me, people trying to break into the software industry, it was just, the answer was always yes. As I got more senior, the asks outpaced the time I had to give. And so I had to be much more thoughtful about how I spent that time. And so I started by building a hierarchy and thinking about what are my most important goals? What am I trying to accomplish? And where do certain blocks of time fall within that? And so, I first and foremost have a set of portfolio companies and founders who I have invested in and who I have made commitments to. And that's going to come first. And then there is, my partners in my firm and the group of people that I work with every day. And then there is our LPs and our network. Then there is this whole world of individuals that reaches out to you and wants time. And the answer is just, you can't do all of those things well. And so I started by thinking about sort of time blocking and how much time could I dedicate and give to different constituencies in any given period. And so I'm constantly iterating on this and thinking about it. But one of the things I'm trying right now is blocking a couple hours every week on my calendar for those, I kind of call them the random outreach. So when a, college student reaches out and is trying to figure out how to get an internship, when a founder that, is not in the place, in the area that I invest is looking for advice or feedback on something. And I block time every week and say, if you reach out to me, I would love to help you with that. And to my earlier point, maybe I'm not the best person and I can make an intro. Great. Even easier. But I only have this small window every week. And so it might be that I can't talk to you for 3 weeks and here's my calendar and let's make it happen then. But trying to be both respectful of the person asking for time as well as respectful of my own needs and where things fall in my own prioritization scale has really helped. And then I think, kind of coming back to this concept of cut to the chase of just what is the thing that they need? I am trying to think more and more about how do I do things scalably and not just with a phone call. We tend to fill any time we have. So if you book a 60-minute meeting, you end up on a 60-minute meeting. If you book a 30-minute meeting, you end up on a 30-minute meeting. And it's just rarely efficient. And so if there are ways to answer something quickly in email or get somebody a faster answer working asynchronously, we can jump in a Google Doc and give feedback in 5 minutes. And that's probably a lot more effective for the other person too, rather than waiting for 3 weeks for a phone call. Trying to find ways to be, generous with the output rather than just the time, I think can be really helpful in actually creating that prioritization mechanism too.
That's great. I love that. And that you thought about your own priorities and who am I always going to just stop things for? And then how do I fit in the rest? It's, to me, it sounds like that big rocks analogy that Stephen Covey says.
One thing we didn't touch on that, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I think one of the things that I think of it in the blocks of my career, it was sort of a lot of yes and a lot of no. And the thing that I really feel like I'm focusing on now is putting myself at the top of that pile and hey, you do need to make time for your workouts or cooking dinner or your partner or whatever else it is in your life that you need to be doing. And sometimes I don't know, if I even look back a couple of years, I would often give that time up and block over it and give it to someone else. And more I'm realizing I'm just so much more productive in my own time and can actually like be way more present and helpful to others when I take care of myself first.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up, because I think on this podcast, we talk a lot about generosity at work, and very often it comes back to that, where we have to be generous to ourselves too, maybe first, so that we have the resource to give to others. And I think there's something really profound about what you're saying around this timeline, because I think that early in our careers, we're proving ourselves, yeah. right? Where we want the experience, we want the exposure, we want the opportunities. We kind of have to get those reps in. And then saying no, because we're just overloaded. And you also don't want to commit to something that you can't fully commit to, right? Yeah. If you don't want to that over promise, under deliver, you want to do the opposite of that.
Yeah. I feel like I took a lesson from that, from Amy Volus, who is a really good friend and a stage two LP too. And we've had a couple of conversations around this of like, first, like figuring out where you find your energy, and like, it's not going to be everything you do every day, but like making sure that you find time for that and that you prioritize it. And then also like, I think she just has this incredibly like, hey, whether it's an innate ability or she intentionally does it, she's really good about like checking in on others in a way that just sort of like makes you feel special. And like when I was reflecting on this topic of generosity, it's something that I kept coming back to, was like, she does the unexpected, or she goes out of her way and acts a little differently than other people do. And it's something I've really tried to emulate. And I think part of that is like taking care of yourself and then thinking about who are the people close to you that you want to like do that for as well.
Sure.
And it's a little bit outside of the general context of work, but I don't know, it feels like it fits to me.
Yeah, I think it absolutely fits, because something that absolutely is essential in any organization is culture. And if part of your culture is that people are cared for and you feel that someone cares about you, I mean, that is like, you can't quantify what value that has for people, like where you belong and somebody's checking in and you have some life event happening and people are celebrating, or you have a life event happen and people are mourning right beside you, you know? I think that's really important. And that whole saying yes to yourself, I mean, that's just a point that I want to highlight, because it is a balancing act. And then one of the things you talked about was the demand of, or the interest that people have in learning from you, the endless inbox. So I wonder if that was the impetus for your blog.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago now, actually, I guess I'm trying to think, a year and a half, I was finding that I was getting like really similar questions from kind of different groups. Started with like a lot of like similar questions in our portfolio. And then I was finding that with our prospect companies or like network of founders around us, a lot of the same things kept coming up. And back to kind of like how to serve like the broadest audience and how to like give that information back. Yeah. Yeah. I found myself like taking an email I had written to one CEO and sort of like generalizing it and reframing it and sharing with it others and being like, oh, this thing that I worked on for this company, actually three others would find useful in forwarding it. And that was really the impetus of like, hey, we get a lot of questions. How can we scale that and actually like make this more public and open source it? And so I started a blog called Dear Stage Two, and it is like your classic Dear Abby advice column, which got a lot of laughs. My partner, Andy Vanetta Smith, was actually the impetus of that one. And it was like, hey, mm-hmm. take the questions you're getting, anonymize them. We have a form on our website. We'll take any question that comes in and commit to answering it. And yeah. I try to keep it like really actionable and tight. Like you can read the article in sub 3 minutes. And what I do is actually go out to our community around us. So this group of LPs I mentioned, or just folks, you know, I know in my network, and make sure that the advice is coming from somebody who is an expert, who is a practitioner, who is doing this today. So sometimes that advice is coming from me, and sometimes I'm getting questions that like, this isn't actually like what I do. So back to our earlier point, let me find you the expert that can get you the right answer. And that's what we've been kind of putting out there into the world. And then I think, you know, the second piece of that is really like taking some of the frameworks that we've developed at Stage Two, and we've created a resource library. And, you know, that to us is sort of another way to like give back to the startup community. You know, the portfolio of companies that we invest in and then works with us is working hand in hand to kind of put those things into action. But we've tried to create a library and allow anybody who wants to tap into those resources to help build the early days of their company and, you know, refine their go-to-market and learn from this incredible group of LPs and partners.
For sure. And I mean, what would be the return on generosity in that scenario? That sounds like a very generous thing to open source and make these nuggets available. I mean, what, how might that reciprocally give you some kind of benefit?
I think a lot of different ways. And if I go like macro first, a lot of the mistakes we see in building go-to-market in an early stage company tend to lead to overhiring, not setting people up for success, which generally leads to riffs or firing. And so I think there is this macro element that if like we can help companies set up stronger foundational go-to-market motion and set up some of their leading indicators and help them understand when they should be hiring and pace that hiring more effectively, there is this just macro view of like, can we actually like be more effective with our employees? Can we be running more efficient businesses, not having massive layoffs? But like tangibly what that looks like for us is we get to talk to founders from an investment standpoint where they're speaking our language already. It's easier for us to evaluate a company who has already read a lot of our content and is tracking some of the product usage metrics or, you know, preparing like financials in a way that makes sense to us or helping us understand their pipeline. So there's a selfish aspect of like, it is easier for us to evaluate a company and all be speaking the same language. And then there's sort of this macro, like, let's all get better at building companies.
Absolutely. And it's like almost pre-work for people that you might be working with in the future. And one of the ones that I downloaded was The Science of Scaling, which is so, so interesting. And your blog is so interesting. A lot of it I don't understand, to be honest with you, Liz, but I'm sure that your founders do. And I think it's just remarkable that you found a way to multiply yourself and to respond to the needs and the requests that you're getting rather than just ignoring people or, you know, putting them in a long queue that they may never hear back from anyone. You're giving them resources, and that's just massively helpful.
We're trying something new right now too. It hasn't been released, and I'm probably going to get yelled at for saying this, but we're releasing a chat stage too. And so we're building our own GPT and saying like, we've got all these resources. Like, can you interact with it in a chat interface? And so we are soon to release that. And again, thinking about scale, like, you know, there is one aspect of this that is like, hey, we've put all these things out there, go find it yourself. But if there is a way to say, hey, I'm looking for X and have that served to you to actually distribute it.
That is so on brand with stage two, right? Use technology to scale yourself. Exactly. So brilliant. So a lot of these founders that you work with and support are competing with large companies and they're trying to get top talent and retain them. Like, what are some of the ways in which you're helping these businesses that you're in your portfolio to manage that competition?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I think putting that in like the context of generosity first, we can come back to the other ways. I'm watching a trend right now happen where I think there is just this expectation around what culture looks like. And it's been set as like a tone from some of the larger companies that leads to like this exceptional set of perks and unlimited vacation. And we are just like bending over backwards for our employees in a lot of ways. And I think part of that is good, but it creates a pretty like tough environment for a startup where often people are asked to work longer hours, take on a little bit more in their role. And I think founders are struggling with how to create balance there. We want to be generous to our employees. We want to create an inclusive culture that allows people from different backgrounds, different experience, different home lives, different like asks on their own time to not only like participate, but thrive in their environment. And so, you know, one of the things I'm watching is this balancing act of like, how do we do that? How are we actually generous to our employees? And, you know, that comes in a lot of different forms. That can be funding a longer parental leave. That can be creating a flexible reentry from that parental leave. That can be mental health days. It can be just open lines of communication with different levels of leadership. I think a lot of it stems from like vulnerability and allowing people to figure out like specifically what do they need versus these blanket perks and benefits. So I've thought a lot about like you know, how that balances with also the drive of like, we are trying to build a big company. And it's not easy. It is very hard to say we want everyone to have work-life balance and to put themselves first, but also like show up when we need you. And I think there is just a tone that needs to get created. And we are spending a lot of time with founders talking through that of how does culture need to evolve at different stages? And I want to be really clear, there is not a right answer here. I am trying to give examples of what I see founders doing really well and in creating that balance and in creating a culture that allows people to actually bring them their whole selves to work, to be authentic, to your point, to, you know, be really clear in what they need and to try to find some of that. I don't know if balance is a good word, but to try to find a like workable middle.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also sounds to me like these founders that you're thinking of who are experimenting or, you know, intentionally trying to create a culture where people belong and can bring their best selves to work, that they are also making that congruent with the values or the kind of brand that they're building, right? That they're, it's intentional. It's not just like some random perk that might sound good on an application, but it's like something that's relevant to how they operate their business.
Absolutely. This concept of having like a very clear set of values that defines your culture. We have a portfolio company, Cable, who's done a really nice job of designing what they call their operating system. And it is effectively a set of values, but they've gone a step further and they've defined like, what does it look like in practice? And more importantly, what is it not? And that to me is like one of the more interesting angles. Like you can be kind, but that doesn't mean like not stating your actual opinion or withholding information or not having hard conversations. And like that, when I read that the first time, it was like a revelation to me. I just thought it was such a really interesting way to be really clear with your employees. Like this is the culture you're joining and how we're going to bring it to life every day. And an incredibly generous CEO who wants to build this amazing long-term culture and is constantly thinking about the trade-offs and how that works.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. Here's what it is. Here's what it isn't. So don't misinterpret.
Yeah. Very few people think about that.
Yeah. Oh no, it's so true. What are some of the ways that Stage 2 creates that kind of a culture? And what are some of the values that you all live by? Having known you all these years, Liz, I think you're, like I said, authentic and you live a values-based leadership model. So just curious to hear, what are some of your core values and maybe what are they and what are they not?
Oh, I love that. So we'll do it the same way. So I think first, when I think about values, like I think about the culture that I want to work in and like what that really means to me. I think first and foremost, there are like two words that come to mind for me. Accountability first. I like to work in an environment where people are very clear on like what they need to accomplish and who they are going to deliver it to and any deadlines, and that people follow through on that. And it feels like very clear that you're going to do that. Second is autonomy. And I think once you have clarity on this first point around accountability, and we all know what we're running towards and we're aligned, maybe that's my third A, the ability to go operate and get it done. I think particularly in like the remote world a lot of us have been working in over the last few years, there's been a lot of like micromanagement popping up in various different ways. And being in an environment that allows me to execute on whatever way gets me to that end goal in the way that's most, you know, real for me, I think is really important. So those, I think, are just a couple of the values that I really care about in like my work relationships, both with my portfolio companies and my partners. I want to be accountable and autonomous. I want them to be too. And I think if we're all working in that model, we're like going to move faster together. And then when I think about like some of the other things that are just important to me personally, and that I think I've learned about myself over the years, you actually hit the nail on the head when we opened this, which is just being authentic. I want to be able to bring my full self to work. I think I spent a lot of years not doing that, or, you know, not, you know, showing exactly who I am. And hey, like the reality is I'm kind of goofy and like I tend to share more personal information than most people do. And like, I'm okay with that. And I also think that that allows other people to do the same and be a little bit more vulnerable when you're open with that. We work in like a very hard environment. Very few startups are all like growing up and to the right and easy, and giving founders the space to be honest and have down days and share their, like, you know, existential threats and ideas. Like, that is, I think, really important, that we can just be a sounding board. And so by trying to be a little more human, we can do that. And then the last thing that I'll bring up is just responsiveness and follow through. And it sort of falls under this accountability bucket. But my partner, Dan, and I have joked about this a lot. One of the things we really pride ourselves on is, like, making sure everybody hears back from us. And that can be, if we've committed to an action, it can just be our email inbox. But this is, like, his story, and he always says this, but, like, if someone walked up to you on the street and asked you a question, you wouldn't turn around and walk away. So when somebody asks you a question, whether that's on Slack or in an email, like, you should be responding to them. Now, that's not to say that you are obligated to give them 30 minutes of your time or to answer their question, but a human being is at the other end of that interaction, and they deserve to be treated like a human being. And it's okay to say, no, thank you, not right now. I don't have time for that. I can't prioritize it at this moment. But making sure that people hear back, they deserve a reply, and actually, like, following through on that is really important to me as well. Right. So I think I got a lot of A words in there. I was, like, thinking, I'm like, accountable, autonomous, authentic, aligned.
Yeah, I think so. I'm picturing a Venn diagram in my mind. Aligned. Yes. Yeah. We've got it. We've got a model right here, Liz. All right. So you shared a lot with us, and I just want to attempt to recap and then get any additional thoughts you have. Because, you know, when we get an opportunity to learn from leaders like you, they're not going to have your exact circumstance or career path, but there's so many nuggets that you just gave us that anyone can apply to their own work and lives. So we want to think about time, you know, the treasure of time, and how are we investing that treasure? So through prioritization and saying no, like, where are our boundaries, right? And you talked about being generous with your time and being boundaried. And within that, you talked about how to be generous to ourselves. Like, what is the self-care and the nurture that would be helpful for us? So, you know, what are my priorities and where do I want to invest my time? And then blocking the hours. That was a really key takeaway here, is how can we block that time so that we have time to respond or whatever it is that we have prioritized? And then you talked about, with the perks, how when we're thinking about the culture that we're creating and what is the value of working here? How are we attracting talent and retaining talent? What are some of the things that would be meaningful to the people here? Is it parental leave? Is it some kind of mental health opportunity? Is there other perks or things that would be valuable to set that cultural tone? And then with values, the clarity of what are our values? What does that mean to us? And then what is it not? If we flip it around and we say, you know, I don't mean, like, for you, when you say accountability, you're not saying I should be accountable for everybody else's responsibilities. You're saying
absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Right. But for some, it's like, no, but we said, it's like, no, we have to be clear. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we're not. Right. And you, like, with autonomy, I'm sure that means that you want independence and freedom, but you don't want to be off on an island.
Right.
Right. So I think just clarifying, like, what are we talking about here? And what would be the example of what it is in the inverse is really helpful for us. And then really just, like, how are we investing our time, talent, and energy? What else would you add to that?
Yeah, I guess, like, one final thing that we haven't really touched on in this concept of time is, I think you have to give without the expectation of return. And so even within this, like, prioritization framework, you can be pointing your time in the right direction, but it is not a give and take. And so much of what is asked of you or where you choose to give should be done without any expectations. And it may be, to your point, that like, pays back. There is some reciprocity, and there certainly will be over time. And it's amazing to me to see some of the relationships that have developed because of that. But I don't know, I'm thinking of examples. If I look back at some of, like, the early hires I made in my career, there is a set of people that continues to reach out. We only talk probably once every 3 or 4 years as they're looking for a new job. But every time I get the text of, like, I want to talk through something with you, I realized like that's a person that for, you know, whatever reason, we connected in a way that made them like value the opinion I can give. Those people over time have referred me candidates, have sent me deals, have been there when I needed them. And this is not some huge investment of time. It's something I want to do because that person is important to me. But it's just a really interesting give and take that has happened naturally without me. I don't get the text and think, okay, well, what are you going to do for me this month? I think, hey, like, how can I help you land in a great spot or make a good decision or, you know, optimize for whatever is important to you or shine some new light on what the decision you're making? I don't know, that kind of time I think is just always great to give, but I'm not sitting there doing it with the expectation that they're going to do something for me right away.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Because I think otherwise we're taking away the goodness that it can offer us. I mean, I do think it's selfish in a way, just because being generous is so fulfilling in ways that are not really tangible. It's just more like we feel like we're adding value and that we're helping someone and we're being of service and we're being able to use the thing like you know, you've earned the things that you now understand. So then you get to, you know, help someone else on their journey. And that just feels so good. So if we were giving with the intention of just getting something back, I think it feels transactional to you and them.
That was exactly the word I was going to say is like, how do you remove that transaction from it?
Because transaction,
it can feel good. Mm-hmm. It can actually be something that like makes you feel great and self-fulfilling as well, but you have to remove that transactional element.
For sure. I mean, I think it's like when we hear an inspirational story or we even see an act of kindness being done for someone else by someone else, like we really didn't have anything to do with that. We just got the reciprocal dividend of that goodness. And so I think of it that way too, is that sometimes like that's why this podcast is what it is, because you know, we're seeking to give people that serotonin like boost of like, yes, you know, keep going. Don't, you know, stay in the fight, right? Because the good people are out there and they just need generous leadership to give them an opportunity or a voice or a break, right?
Love that.
Yeah. So thank you so much for investing your precious time with us and sharing these nuggets. I so appreciate you and I'm just grateful for our friendship.
Thank you, Shannon. This is awesome.
Thanks for listening to ROG, Return on Generosity Podcast. Please help us grow by subscribing and reviewing us on your favorite podcast player. And for more information, visit bridgebetween.com. We grow when we give.
우리는 나누면서 성숙합니다.
We grow when we give.
On rayonne quand on donne.
We grow when we give.